Welcome to Peernovation, the podcast with Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Building on our previous shows, The Year of the Peer and What Anyone Can Do, we turn our attention to helping business leaders build high-performing teams. We'll talk with a diverse group of thought leaders who will share stories and insights that will help you and your teams achieve new heights. If you believe there is strength in numbers and that meeting the challenges of the future can only be achieved if we do it together, then join us for the conversation. Today's guest is Jeff Harry. Jeff shows individuals and companies how to tap into their true selves to feel their happiest and most fulfilled, all by playing. Jeff has worked with Google, Microsoft, Southwest Airlines, Adobe, the NFL, Amazon, and Facebook, helping their staff to infuse more play into the day-to-day. Learn more about Jeff's work at rediscoveryourplay.com. We welcome Jeff to the show. We welcome everybody back to another episode of Peernovation, the podcast. You can find the website at peernovation.co, and you can find all kinds of ways to subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere that podcasts are found. We got a special guest today, and you can tell by the garb, especially the tie kind of gives away what the theme's going to be. Leo, you got the introduction.
So, you know, it's been really great. Obviously, in the last several weeks, we've been talking about Peernovation, and really we've been talking about what teams are capable of. And it's about really working together and how they can do so a lot more effectively. A key component of that, which I don't talk about a whole lot in my book, because I'm not necessarily, an expert in this area. And this is a whole area in and of itself in terms of play and the value of it to us in the workplace. And quite frankly, the value of it, you know, in our lives and what that means. So to have Jeff Harry here to be able to talk about play and what it can mean, you know, for us in our personal lives as a society, you know, clearly in the workplace, we're just really privileged to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So let's get down to it a little bit. I want to know how you get into this whole thing, other than the fact that, you know, you just were playing as a kid and you just couldn't stop or what happened.
Right,
how did
right.
you get all, you know,
what? It all started with the movie Big. Do you remember the movie Big with Tom Hanks?
Oh, sure.
So I saw that movie, and, you know, where he's dancing on the piano and then he gets hired by, you know, a toy company. And I was like, that's a job? Like, I didn't know that's a job. That's amazing. So I, in third grade, went down to F.E.O. Schwartz and started dancing on the piano, looking that I was going to get a job there. And then I did not. So I went home and I started writing toy companies in third grade. And I just did not stop writing them. And in high school, I finally got a letter back from a toy company that told me to go into mechanical engineering. I probably should not have listened to them, but I did anyway. Went to college, graduated, and then got into the toy industry. And I don't know if you've ever gotten something that you've always dreamed of, and it's not great at all. It's so disappointing when you finally arrive. But there was no play, no fun, no high fives, no kids, no toys. I mean, we might as well have been selling microwaves or socks, you know? So I was in New York. I left New York. This is right around 9/11. Came to the San Francisco Bay Area. And I bumped into an organization that was teaching kids engineering with Lego. And they basically were just playing for a living. And there were seven of them. And they were paying $150 a week. And it was a joke, I thought, of a job. But they got to play. So I just was like, well, this is what I want to do. I want to play for a living. So we started doing that. And I was able to take the company from seven people to about 400 of us. We taught, I think, 1 million kids in the span of like 12 years, 100,000 kids a year. We became like the largest Lego inspired STEM organization, like in the US. But while we were doing it, we were just playing. Like, we were just making it up as we went along. We had no idea what we were doing. We had no business plan. We picked cities because they were fun. You know, we'd be like, Wyoming. I don't know if we want to go to Wyoming. New York, totally. We'd hire people because they were playful. And then we got the attention of Silicon Valley because we were based out of the Bay Area. And they were like, hey, do you do team building events? And we were like, of course we do. Even though we didn't, we just were like, yes, we'll just say yes to everything, right? And then that was Facebook, Google, you know, Adobe, all of them, right? Cisco. And while I was running these team building events for the next 6 to 8 years, I noticed that they talked about disruption. They talked about agile and risk taking and innovation and all those buzzwords, right? But they had not created a playful work environment to do any of that, you know? And they were not addressing the harder issues at work, like how do you deal with a toxic person at work? How do you deal with office politics so you don't have the meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting? How do you get people in a state of flow? You know, how do you deal with your inner critic? All of that stuff. So I created Rediscover Your Play, combining positive psychology and play to address those issues with teams.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. You know, one of the favorite things that I used to get to do, because I do a lot of workshops for CEOs, right? So these folks are anywhere typically from 35 to 60, men and women. And one of the things that I would get them involved in is we'd actually get, I'd get them to thumb wrestle. And there was obviously a larger point to doing this. However, the fun part about it was, you know, if you present a game like that to them and you get them to stand up and just do it, you know, think about it. They don't, you know, you don't, there's nothing apologetic about it. There's nothing like that. You're just like, we're going to do this right now. And the funny part about it is, as I'm sure you've experienced countless times, the room, that room of CEOs, they turned into 8-year-olds like that fast, within seconds.
So fast.
And it's so, great to watch them have fun and watch them do that. And just the hilarity that breaks out and everything that happens. The point of the game, though, is you get them to basically thumb wrestle one another for 30 seconds with the idea of whoever gets the most pins wins this fictional $100,000 that we have. Okay. The interesting part is about almost every time someone will either figure it out or who knows, maybe they've done it before or something like that. But I'll go around at the end. I'll say, all right, how many pins did you get? It's 3, 4, maybe 5, maybe 3. And then someone says, I got 30. And I'm like, all right, we'll get back to you. And then we go around the room and then you say, okay, how'd you get the 30? I said, hey, we just said, hey, I'm going to let them beat me 30 times. We're going to split the money and be done. Right. So now you teach this idea, you know, or really you don't teach it at all. They learn it through play and they get the sense of not only did we achieve a better result, we achieved an exponentially better result because we worked together and we weren't fighting one another. You know, we had a gentleman on, we had a lot of fun time with Francis, right, Randy, with, you know, talking about Squirkle, and he runs this thing called the Squirkle game, which he starts, you know, every, you know, one of his sessions with, which is this, you know, this whole fascinating game. But the idea is it just gets people in a completely different place where they become open to learn and take risk and do things that it just frees up everything when you do that. I can't imagine, you know, what you've seen as you start working inside. So quick question. You weren't doing any of these team building things. Someone asked you to do it. You said, sure, we do it. So how did you go about, what did that look like for you in terms of working with teams inside companies like that?
I mean, at first it was just a lot of experimentation, but now, because now I've been doing it for so long, I think one of the most powerful things about play is like it drops the ego, right? You know, and especially for a lot of CEOs is they constantly feel like they have to be the leader, you know? And now all of a sudden they don't have to do that. So, you know, say for example, we're running a workshop on how to deal with toxic people at work. We do a lot of play that's a lot of role playing where it's just like, what's it like to be that toxic person? Let's feel what that's like. And then what's it like to actually have that conversation? So we have people do a lot of reps of like different scenarios of how they would have that conversation. And sometimes it's not always playful. Sometimes it's kind of serious, but they're getting practice in a safe environment so that they can go out back out of the world and be like, I can actually now have this conversation. I can actually focus not on attacking the person's character, but just addressing behavior and trying to see where we actually align and get on the same page, right?
Jeff, you mentioned positive psychology in part of this work. And of course, I mean, here I am. I got Gumby. I got Tweedledee and Tweedledum back here. You can't see it, but I've got Ballard Street cartoon prints all on the walls. And the walls here, I call this the Yellow Studio because I saw a room and the walls were mustard yellow, and I thought, I like that. So my walls look like French mustard has been plastered all over the walls. Question, though, the psychology or the insight that we can gain from each other as we watch play, which clearly goes back all the way to our childhood. Right. I'm thinking of all the kids I grew up with in the neighborhood. And I mean, you got a real good sense of each other and how they're wired and what their sense of humor is and what they like, what they don't like, and the playground conflicts that we were able to avoid because we figured it out. I mean, talk about it.
Yeah. So there's something really powerful about free play, which is actually being taken away more and more from kids. The opportunity to actually play where they have choice to make those decisions. So like, that's just a plug for there needs to be more recess, right? There needs to be more time for kids to just get bored. So having said that, what's actually happening from a positive psychology standpoint is when you're in play, you're actually in flow, and your brain is typically in a beta state. When it turns into a flow state, it actually goes through something called transient hypnofrontality. And it's where your prefrontal cortex, which is there to protect you from all the dangers in the world, right? That's where your inner critic lies. What happens is a part of your prefrontal cortex actually shuts down in a flow state, and your inner critic starts to, and your implicit mind starts to appear. You become highly creative. You start seeing all the opportunities in front of you instead of what most adults do, where they get fixated on one result, and expectations are the thief of joy. So that's why adults get so disappointed all the time. And then what happens in that flow state is you get this shot of dopamine and you become highly curious. And then also, because that part of the brain shuts down, it distorts time. So you know when you're in a flow play state because you're doing the work where you forget about time, where you're just doing the stuff that you love most. And Dr. Csikszentmihalyi, a famous positive psychologist, talks about how when you're in a flow state, what has happened is the difficulty of the task meets your skill level perfectly. So when you're doing a task that you're not very good at, you have a lot of anxiety. And when you're doing a task that you've done so many times, you have a lot of boredom. But between anxiety and boredom is that flow state. So what I put out to your listeners and specifically to your team leaders is ask your staff, what is the work that they love to do most? What is the work that they forget about time? And if they can double down on that work, like if they can change, if they're now doing 5% of that work, right, where they connect with clients and they just love connecting with clients, but that's only 5% of their job, can we increase it to 7%? And what will happen scientifically has shown that it has a ripple effect on everything else that they do. And if you want to see proof of this, look at Google with their 20% rule. They give their staff a fifth of their time to pursue projects that are interesting to them as long as they help the organization out. And what did the Google 20% rule help with? It created Gmail. It created Google Meet. It created all these billion-dollar ideas because you allowed people the freedom to play within the confines of work.
You know, when you look at Finland, one of the top secondary school systems in the world, they provide a lot of that free time and play time and recess and that place for kids to, you know, explore, you know, and discover, which obviously, you know, is really huge. The other thing it reminds me of, and one thing I did mention in Peer Innovation, speaking of play, was this idea of the marshmallow challenge when the kids have to build the tower with the sticks of pasta and the string and all that. And the idea that the kids do it because they do it through play, basically. It's this iterative process. They don't create a big strategic plan for the building only to have it fall down with a minute left to play. And there's no way to rebuild it anymore. And that's why, you know, CEOs and business school students, you know, lose to kindergartners.
All the time, right.
I know.
Right.
So, the one comment you made, though, if I don't mind, I have to tell you the quote, expectations are the thief of joy. That is a nugget right there. That is, and that kind of speaks to this whole conversation here.
Well, let's explore that, right? Like, how's your 2020 coming along, right? There's so many people in December 31st of 2019 that had this clear vision of what 2020 was going to be, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then it didn't happen. You know, their business didn't double. They didn't get to travel all the world, all that stuff. But anyone that was so fixated on keeping that and being like, that must happen in 2020, did a disservice to themselves because they weren't able to just let go of what it wasn't anymore. You know, mm-hmm. we even do that in our Futures Where Your Fun Is workshop, where we literally have people write down what they are not going to be able to do in 2020 and fold it up into a paper airplane and let that go. Like, let it go, not forever, but for now. Like, you got to let that go because you have a month and a half left in 2020. What do you want to create, right? And when we work with a lot of companies, like I was just running a flow workshop with a biomedical company, and I was telling them, I mean, the future is, I get this from my play mentor, Kevin Carroll, the future is where the fun is. Which companies are having the most fun? Those are the ones that have been able to adapt the quickest during 2020. Those are the ones that have been able to garner the most attention, the Netflix, the Hulus, the TikToks. Like, they're just messing around right now. And because we're not going to get back to normal. It's going to be a brand new normal. So we have to be able to adapt in this new world, and embracing a play-oriented mindset will help you actually navigate that.
The small business owner, though, Jeff, that says, listen, that's great for Google. I'm not Google. You know, I can't afford to give my staff one-fifth of their time to just kind of fiddle around and see if they can come up with something, because I got to generate cash, man.
Yeah.
Then how can the SMB guys and gals out there leverage play for their
benefit? I think it's still double downing on what is the work that you love to do most. What is the work that your staff loves to do most? Let's figure out how they can do just a little bit more of it. We're not at, like I said before, we're only changing it from like 5 to 7%. That might be just 1 to 2 hours a week. But if you can do that, that is amazing. If you can get them into their flow state more and maximize not only their potential, but you're communicating to them, I care about you and I want you to invest in the work that you love the most. Not only will you be able to keep your employees more when retention is really hard in this economy, right? But you're able to just show that you care. I think a lot of companies, both big and small ones, are operating from a place of fear right now instead of a place of experimentation. And that place of fear is causing them to run back to the things that might have worked back in 2019, but are not going to work now. And they have to be able to embrace this experimental, play-oriented mindset, or they're going to become the next blockbuster.
So when you think about creating this kind of culture that allows for and in fact encourages more, you know, experimentation and all that, how difficult is that for companies in with remote and distributed work teams now to try to pivot?
Oh, in the virtual environment?
Yeah.
I think from my experience, from the organizations and the companies that I've worked for, I think it's more in their head than I really believe is actually what's happening, right? Is I think, oh, well, we feel more disconnected. So, you know, let's make the meeting shorter. Let's focus on making sure that we get our certain work done and then we get off the phone as quickly as possible. And right now, what I'm recommending to a lot of team leaders is this is when you should be building relationships more. This is when you should actually be investing more in the connection with your staff. I know a few team leaders that I've recommended where the main goal of the meeting is for people to leave energized at the end of the meeting. It's not about going through the to-do list because they already know what to do on their to-do list. But how do I get them motivated out of this? How do I communicate to them that I actually care? You know, I know another team leader that just has lunch with the staff. They don't even have, they have their one-on-one meetings, but as a group, they just have lunch a couple times a week because he is thinking about culture and thinking about how do I communicate consistently that even though we're in a virtual environment, we're still the team that we were, you know? And I think a lot of people right now are instead, you know, being really scared, like not being transparent about how the business is going, not being transparent about like the fact that we're in this world of uncertainty and we might be until like mid 2021. It'd be better to be more vulnerable and transparent with your staff than to be hiding right now, which I'm finding a lot of team leaders are doing.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think there are others, however, who, when they noticed, interestingly enough, because many of them obviously were forced into this, when they noticed in the first few months of going remote, productivity actually went up. I think a lot of the savvy CEOs recognize that's not sustainable unless we pay attention to the very things that you're talking about, which is why in many of them that I spoke to almost were embarrassed about the fact that finally I'm having more conversations and beginning more meetings with my staff just saying, how's everybody doing?
Exactly.
Not did you get the report in, not did you,
exactly.
you
know,
or just, how are
or
you,
let me just
you know?
I mean, there is even something called priming the meeting where the first words said in the meeting prime the rest of the meeting. And that means even what you say before the meeting starts. So if somebody is talking about their baby or something glorious that happened, that primes the rest of the meeting. If someone is complaining before the meeting starts, you're setting yourself up for a crappier meeting, right? I think the other thing that we have to take in consideration is like looking at how we actually are currently doing our work, right? You know, I'm talking more and more about this. I've been researching the 8-hour workday. Where does the 8-hour workday come from? It comes from, I think his name was Jim Cohn, an Irish labor activist, Welsh activist, who came up with 8 hours of leisure, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep. He came up with this in 1814, right? No one paid attention to him for over a century. And then Henry Ford implemented it back in 1917. And when he did it, he was doing it because workers on the assembly line were working 11 to 15 hours. And
exactly.
Some of them were dying. They were dying on the job. Like they were literally dying on the assembly line. He was like, this can't work. But what he did was then he goes, okay, I'm going to cut it down to 8 hours and then I'm going to double your salary. This is 1917 when no one was like, what are you doing? Well, you know, we can't do this. This is going to destroy everything. And it didn't destroy everything, right? But since 1917, we have not addressed the 8-hour workday, right? And when you do studies to find out how much an average worker can focus for 8 hours, they only are working 2 hours and 53 minutes out of the day, right? Mm-hmm. So what is happening with the other 5 hours of their day? What are they doing with that time? You know, what wasted time? How many meetings are we having that are an hour when they don't need to be an hour? How many tasks are we creating just so we can be busy? Like if you know that your staff can only focus for 3 to 5 hours in a given day, what is the work that you most want them to do? And how do you help them get into that flow state so they can do it?
Well, and that speaks to the idea that the more that you get them in flow state, the more productive they're going to be with those hours that they've got, right? I mean, you know, the other thing, Randy and I've talked about this too, that I think has completely shifted the dynamic when it comes to relationships that we have this now, I think, new opportunity to build with our fellow employees is rather than be going to a central workplace, having our little central work stuff on and parking in our lot and going in and meeting in an office. Now, we're inviting everyone into our homes. And when you take out the, you know, the crazy backgrounds and just have whatever's going on in your house and it's, you know, kids crying and the dog jumping around and, you know, all this other stuff. And I think there we kind of tap into a little bit of a shared humanity there about what we're trying to do and some of the challenges we have in the midst of trying to also do this work, you know, at the same time, you know, so I just think that feels, you know, I know one of the things that Randy and I also talked about ahead of time that we'd love to know from you is tell us a few of your favorite games that you like to play with, you know, employees and teams and all that. And, you know, Randy had mentioned about this whole idea of, you know, small to mid-sized companies who may not be used to kind of bringing play into part of how they do things and yet could really benefit from it. If there's one particular game you would recommend for them or one particular form of play that you would find that would kind of break the ice for them and get them to feel like they see the value of it. That would be really cool.
Sure. So here, let's start with the games, right? One of the my favorite games that I'm actually running with Power Tennessee tonight is it's a getting yourself out of your head game. And you can actually do this via Zoom if you want, where and when you do it in person, you have you tell people right at the beginning, okay, you have a partner, you're going to draw the partner. You have a piece of paper, you have 1 minute, go. And everyone starts freaking out. Because they're like, oh, I've never drawn. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'm not an artist. Oh, this is going to. And they're like apologizing as they're literally writing, you know. So they draw. I'm counting down. I'm counting really fast, too, like making even more anxiety. So they're like, oh, gosh. You know, and then I'm like, all right, now you have to show each other. And then they show each other. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, goodness. Right. And then we run it back. But this time I go, okay, look at their face. Get a good look. Memorize their face. Close your eyes. Now do it. And then they do it again, right? And then it's all quiet. It's super quiet, right? And then when they finish, they open their eyes and then they start laughing at it because they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Oh, it wasn't that bad. But then we talk about it, like, which one did you judge yourself less with? Oh, it was the second one. It was because, you know, my eyes were closed. You know, I didn't put as much pressure on myself. And it's just like, and I do that because I'm like, that's the mindset I want you for the rest of this workshop. Because we have, this is how we have to be, where we're not judging ourselves all the time. Adults are constantly looking for the right and wrong answer. When frankly, if 2020 has taught you anything, nobody knows. We're just all figuring it out as we go along. It's different for each person. You know, the advice sometimes I give to a lot of small businesses is you left a company to start your own business. So why are you working exactly the way in which you worked when you were working at that business? You hated working there. Now you've created your own company. So what did you, as my business mentor says, wouldn't you want to be paid to be you? So wouldn't you be trying to figure out what do I like to do most? How do I want to work today? I'm my own boss. I can work however I want. I can manage my people however I want. So taking that judgment out is a big thing. My friend Lauren and I run a workshop called Your Future is Where Your Fun Is. And what we do in that, which is a really interesting process, is we have teams actually break out into groups and they share what they loved to do when they were a kid. What was the favorite thing you loved to do as a kid? So example, she loved sardines, which is reverse hide and seek, right? And what did she love about it? The creativity, the collaboration, the connection that it provided. Those are her play core values when it came to the thing she loved. So now we go, okay, creativity, collaboration, connection. What do you do now that does that? What at work do you do now? Oh, I love to, you know, connect with clients. How much of that are you doing? Not that much. How can we get you to do more? You know, how do we use these play core values to dictate the type of work that you're going to do? You know, and then the last thing that I say, you know, and the tip that I would give small businesses to play more is, well, there's two tips. There's two suggestions. One is, you first have to learn, in order to play, you first have to learn how to soothe yourself. And you learn, as my play mentor, Gwen Gordon says, like, you learn it from the person that took care of you the most. So you actually adopt that way of like nurturing yourself, right? So you have to soothe or calm yourself. How do I soothe myself? Or let me think about it. I have my best ideas when I'm in the shower. I have my best ideas when I'm walking. I have my best ideas. Like, you'll know that, you know, there's that time, right? So once you are learn how to soothe yourself, then the second thing that I recommend they do is get bored. And what I mean by that is stop binge watching Netflix, stop looking at social media, stop looking at what all the other businesses are doing. And when you say, well, I don't have time to do it, look at your phone right now and look at how much hours of the day you look at your phone. It's probably 3 to 5 hours. You can find some time to get bored, where you're not consuming, because the amount of information received in a day, people receive that in a year in 1950, right? So block all that out, get bored, and just start listening to that inner curiosity, that inner whisper, that inner child that's like, you know, hey, let's start a podcast. hey, let's, you know, let's market in this way. Hey, let me reach out to a client I've always wanted to work with, but I've been really scared to, but I'm going to reach out in a really creative way and make a video in order to get their business. Like, follow that curiosity, because no one, again, knows what they're doing. So all the marketing is now new and interesting. Many new ways, right? And you have to think about the businesses. Google didn't exist 20 years ago. YouTube didn't exist 15 years ago. TikTok didn't exist 3 years ago. People are just constantly making stuff up that we never thought were possible. You have that same talent in your small business. So how are you going to show up?
Jeff, a lot of people in small business, and I'm thinking back, I've been a fan of Jeffrey Gitomer. Jeffrey Gitomer's a celebrity sales trainer, and I started following Jeffrey about 30 years ago, and Jeffrey was a guy that really was insistent on having fun, which is why I was attracted to him. And he said, you know, you're going to go in and you're going to, here's my brochure, you know, and everybody's got a brochure. He said, you know where the brochure's going to end up. It's going to end up in the trash.
Right.
Why don't you have your logo embossed on a plastic trash can, take it to the client or the prospect, say, here, I'm gifting you this trash can. Here's my brochure. I'm going to put it in here because that's where you're going to put it anyway. And
right.
Then you leave it with, at least they got something to talk about.
Right.
That leads me to this question and to get your suggestions. How can we make the mundane fun? Because so much of our life, it frankly is mundane and fairly routine, but it's stuff that's critical. It's stuff we've got to get done.
Yeah. So there's a few suggestions that that come up for me, right? And I'll first use this example. I remember I was at a conference, you know, where they have all those booths, right? And I remember this one group set up a booth, and that booth must have cost at least $10,000. They had like, you know, big screens, and I think they were selling like scoreboards or something like that. And right next to him was this guy that had nothing. He just had some pens. Maybe he had like four pens because he forgot to bring anything. His booth was just surrounded by people. And it was like, what is this dude doing? He has nothing. But he was engaging. He was connecting. He was bringing humanity to this, right? So if I was to address, how do we address, you know, the mundane tasks, you know, get your team together, or if you don't have a team, you know, get your mastermind of other small business owners together, right? And I refer to this as the tipsy brainstorm, where however you want to get tipsy, you know, some people like alcohol, some people like chocolates, some people like ice cream, whatever it is that drops your inhibitions, and you brainstorm for like two hours while you're just hanging out with people and be like, these are the tasks that I hate most. Do these better, and like get answers from different people, right? You know, one tip I give to a lot of small business owners when I'm working with them, a lot of solopreneurs, is I think a lot of times they forgot what value they bring, right? So I have them do, one of the first things I have my clients do is they reach out to 3 to 5 either of their clients or their friends. And they ask them these two questions. Like, what value do I bring? Like, what value do I bring to your life? Not even my business, but me. What do I do for you? Because I think a lot of times we forget that. And then the second question I ask is, when have you seen me most alive? Like, when have you seen me most playful, like most creative, like most, you know, just most engaged? And when you get answers from that, it gives you so much information of like, this is the work I already do. These are the ways I already play. These are the ways in which I can take a mundane task and do something awesome with it. And when we're able to do that awareness and introspection, that's where all the answers lie. Because I say this all the time, you have all the answers that you need. You simply have to play enough in order to figure them out.
You're on mute, Leo.
Thank you. So just before we get started, you were kind of kind enough to mention one of our recent shows that talked about coming together. And wanted to maybe inject some of your expertise into that conversation, because it's interesting to me, especially when you've referred to judgment and how not judging others has become such a critical part of this. It also kind of occurred to me that we've gone so far the other way that we've turned into children again, but we engage in name calling, kind of like what we did when we were 7 or 8 years old, versus where we should be as kids, which is the non-judgmental, you know, and not just, you know, just being hard on ourselves in addition to being hard on others. You know, Eric Wall, who does a lot of work, you know, does this incredible, basically, you know, performances essentially in front of large audiences where he creates this incredible artwork. And he says that when he talks to a group of 9-year-olds, well, he talks to a group of adults and he says, how many of you can draw? And like everyone sits there like this, and maybe you'll have one or two people will sheepishly put their hand up.
Yep.
He said, you talk to a group of 9-year-olds, everybody's, they can all draw. So, you know, so around this whole idea of play and judgment and how we judge ourselves, how we judge others, how can we be bringing a lot more of what you're talking about that can help us maybe turn the temperature down a little bit and also help us maybe engage one another in a way where we can be all a heck of a lot happier?
Yeah. So where should I want to go with this? So I think we first have to have compassion for ourselves, because I think a lot of times when we ask ourselves, how come I don't play enough as an adult, or I don't have enough time to play, or whatever it is, right? I always tell people the reason why adults don't play enough is because of the 148,000 no's. And what I mean by that is, by the time you're 18 years of age, you've heard the word no 148,000 times, at least according to certain studies, right? Maybe the word yes, maybe 8,000 to 10,000 times. On top of that, you go to school where you're asked to raise your hand all the time. You're asked to be asked for permission. You're shut on all the time by adults. And then, you know, you get into your teens and there's social media that's telling you that you're not enough. So it's rebellious. It's such a revolutionary act simply to play, to go against the norm, because everyone's telling you this is the right way. This is the, you know, this is the wrong way. You should not be this way. Stop being too mischievous. Stop being too much. How many times have you heard that, right? So breaking through that is a huge thing. As for how to bring people together around play, I think of the story of these two gangs. I happen to live in Chicago, where they had a lot of violence between each other. And then, you know, some kids died on both sides, like really young kids. And they were like, we can't continue this. So they decided to build a playground together, you know, which was really weird. Like, they funded the playground, they put it together, you know, and violence started to stop. And the reason why was because they were gathering together and seeing each other's humanity when their kids were playing on that playground. So we have to figure out what are ways in which we can see humanity in each other. How are we having conversations, or maybe even having our kids, you know, whether they're conservative, you know, or progressive, and have them play. And then while they're playing, then you start talking, right? Like, there are ways. How do we create environments where people can have discussions where the goal is not to be right, but the goal is to understand, right? Because you have a choice. Eric Bailey, my friend, always says this. You have a choice. You either can be right or you can choose to understand. Let's focus and show examples of how to have that conversation. Because right now, if you turn on television, you can't find that. You can't find those examples, you know? And a lot of the stuff that we do in our consulting workshops is about having hard conversations. How do you have a hard conversation where you're addressing a behavior and not addressing character? You're not attacking the person, but you're trying as a group to try to solve it together. And you spoke about that on your last podcast. You know, or even, I think it was one of you was talking to your father, right? Was it you, Randy, or you, Leo, that was speaking to your father?
Could have been either one of us. Tell us.
Okay. Well, you were speaking with your father, you know, who was talking about Ronald Reagan and how he had, you know.
Oh, after it was my father-in-law, actually. Right. Yes.
Debate with Tip O'Neill, and then they would have drinks afterwards. How can we do that again? We have to do it by experimenting and having that hard conversation and maybe offending and then trying it again and again and again until we start to have respect for one another and bring humanity back into the conversation.
Jeff, tell our audience as we wrap up, I want to give you an opportunity. First, and thank you for being on the show, but give you an opportunity to tell our audience how they can contact you and what you can do for them, no matter who they are or what their context is.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at rediscoveryourplay.com. And if you're a solopreneur, simply click on the Let's Play button where I have all these play experiments, and then we can hop on a call. And we can help you rediscover how do we infuse more play into your work to address your most challenging issues so you can kick ass this in this world. And then I have my consulting page for a lot of the Fortune 500 companies that I work with, where we address how to deal with office politics, how to deal with your inner critic, how to get your staff in a state of flow, how to deal with toxicity at work, and just basically bring more fun in. Because frankly, the future is where the fun is. And that is where I want to help organizations go to.
We appreciate all of our listeners and those of you that are viewing. You can view it at the website, peernovation.co. You can also go to our YouTube channel. But we want to thank everybody, and thanks, Jeff, for being our guest today. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us. To subscribe to the podcast and learn more about how you can engage Peernovation for your organization, contact us on the website at peernovation.co. Till next week, remember, the power of we begins with you.